Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 27, attacked by Chandavega on the city of Puranjana. Text number 10. Teshu tat rikta hadeshu griha koshanujivishu nirupena mamatvena Vishayeshu Anvabhadyata Teshu Tadrikta Hadeshu Griha Koshanu Jivishu Nirutena Mamatvena Vishayeshu Anubhadyata Vishayeshvana anpapadyata Teshu tadrikta hadeshu Griha koshanu jivishu Nirutena namatvena Vishayeshvana papadyata Teshu tadrikta hadeshu Griha koshanu jivishu Nirutena namatvena Vishayeshvan vapadyata Balinese Matajis. To them. Tat rikta hadeshu the plunderers of his money. Griha, home. Kosha, treasury. Anujivishu, to the followers. Nirudhena, deep-rooted. Namatvena, by attachment. Vishayeshu, to sense objects. Anvabhadhyata, became bound. Translation: these sons and grandsons were virtually plunderers of King Puranjana's riches, including his home, treasury, servants, secretaries, and all other paraphernalia. Puranjana's attachment for these things was very deep-rooted. Purport: in this verse, the word rikta hadeshu, meaning plunderers of wealth, is very significant. One's sons, grandsons, and other descendants are ultimately plunderers of one's accumulated wealth. There are many celebrated businessmen and industrialists who produce great wealth and are highly praised by the public, but all their money is ultimately plundered by their sons and grandsons. In India, we have actually seen one industrialist who, like King Puranjana, was very much sexually inclined and had half a dozen wives. Each of these wives had a separate establishment that necessitated the expenditure of several thousands of rupees. When I was engaged in talking with him, I saw that he was very busy trying to secure money so that all his sons and daughters would get at least 500,000 rupees each. Thus, such industrious businessmen or kamis are called mudhas in the Shastras. They work very hard, accumulate money, and are satisfied to see that this money is plundered by their sons and grandsons. Such people do not want to return their wealth to its actual owner. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5.29, Bhaktaram Jagitapa Sam Savaloka Maheshwaram. The real proprietor of all wealth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the actual enjoyer. So-called earners of money are those who simply know tricks by which they can take away God's money under the guise of business and industry. After accumulating this money, they enjoy seeing it plundered by their sons and grandsons. This is the materialistic way of life. In materialistic life, one is encaged within this body and deluded by false egoism. Thus one thinks, I am this body. I am a human being. I am an American. I am an Indian. This bodily conception is due to false ego. Being deluded by false ego, one identifies himself with a certain family, nation, or community. In this way, one's attachment for the material world grows deeper and deeper. Thus, it becomes very difficult for the living entity to extricate himself from his entanglement. Such people are graphically described in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 16:13-15, in this way: Idam adya maya labdham imam prakshe manoratam idam astidam apim me bhavishyati punadhanam aso maya hato shatru hanishe chaparam api Ishvaroham maham bhogi sidoham balavan suki adyo bijan lavan asmi konyosti sadrisho maya yakshe dasyami vodishya itti agyana vimohita. The demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. In this way, people engage in various laborious activities, and their attachment for body, home, family, nation, and community becomes more and more deep-rooted. Om Agyanati Nirandasya Yananjanaha Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Darati Svaparanti Namasreshtam anumapi sachiputra matra swarupam rupam tasya grajam rupurim maturim dostabritim Tatha kunda girivara mahora rika madavasam praptaya sapatita kripaya sri gurum tam natosi Teshu tadrikta hareshu griha krushanu jivishu niruddha mam matrasvena nishayeshva vapatyata. Those sons and grandsons were virtually plunderers of King Puranjana's riches, including his home, treasury, servants, secretaries, and all other paraphernalia. Puranjana's attachment for these things was very deep-rooted. I didn't realize until I read the purport here from the book how long the purport was, because I read the purport from electronic version. Being in Mayapur, I don't have access to hard copy materials so much where I'm staying. And when I read the purport from the Veda base, I just thought it was a one-page purport. But it's a long purport with a simple point. A very profound point of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And there's something here in today's purport that can sometimes trip us up, and sometimes perhaps we could take the wrong lesson, the wrong meaning, the wrong understanding from this presentation here in Srimad Bhagavatam, not just from today's purport, from today's translation, but from this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam and other sections like this in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I want to talk about this Srimad Bhagavatam and how we derive correct understanding, tattva, from the Srimad Bhagavatam as a sambandha, as our relationship with Krishna, with the living entities, with this material world, and how that understanding guides us and directs us in our process, in the process of Krishna consciousness, through to the Abhideya, of the process of the Srimad Bhagavatam. What is the process the Srimad Bhagavatam is recommending for us to understand or to solidify the teaching, today's teaching, and the teaching of the Srimad Bhagavatam in general? And then, of course, we want to finish up our class today with the goal, the ultimate goal of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day. In a lecture in San Francisco in 1971, Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture on the Ratha Yatra day. It's a very beautiful lecture because it's called Ratha Yatra in San Francisco. And there's a lecture about Jagannath Ratha Yatra at the beginning. Prabhupada, he welcomes everybody. As he does in many lectures, he welcomes everybody by saying, you know, my dear sons and daughters, or dear ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for participating in this Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada has opened many, many lectures like this to his devotees and public lectures, thanking people for participating in this Krishna consciousness movement. And in the course of this lecture goes, there's two lectures. There's actually three lectures in one, but it's titled the same lecture. It's the before Rath Yatra, and then during the Rath Yatra, and after Rath Yatra. So Prabhupada gives us some Mandabhi Dayam Prayojana lecture. They recorded the same lecture on the same day. It's a very wonderful lecture. And he says the purpose of this Rath Yatra festival and all the festivals that we perform in Krishna consciousness is to absorb the devotees 24 hours in Krishna consciousness. We've had that experience in festivals, or when we intensify our activities in Krishna consciousness, that we extend our day from an 8-hour day to a 12-hour day to a 16-hour day to a 24-hour day. And Śrīla Prabhupāda said that this is the reason why we're participating, or why we're performing this Rath Yatra festival, so that we can get a taste for 24-hour-a-day Krishna consciousness. Every day we will burn out if we keep that level of Krishna consciousness. But if we get a taste for it, then we want to go back for it, and back for another taste, and back for another taste. That was a good experience. Not that we had 8 hours Krishna consciousness and 8 hours of something else consciousness. But we had more and more exposure to Krishna, to the deity, to serving the Lord, to the association of the devotees, to hearing Krishna katha. It became more and more prominent in those 24 hours. And so we became more and more Krishna conscious. And that's the purpose of Krishna consciousness. Anyway, the lesson is here today. It's a clear lesson, but it could be confused. Sometimes we play a game with children. Sometimes adults play a game. It's called Chinese Whispers. I'm not sure if that's culturally sensitive or not, but the game is like this. One person is at the start of the long line, and they say something like, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The first person says that. And they whisper it in the ear of the second person. And the second person says, Krishna is Godhead. And the third person says, Krishna is a servant of the devotees. And it goes around the room. And by the time it gets to the 20th person, Krishna's not in the equation. Krishna left the... Krishna's not there. It's all about Balaram or the cowherd boys or something. Or it's about Dhanukasura or something. It completely gets distorted. In English language, we call this Chinese whispers. We play that with the kids to illustrate the importance of listening and repeating what we hear. So sometimes we hear something from Srimad Bhagavatam, and then we say, oh yeah, I got that. That, all right, the women, the wife, she's like a tigress. She's like a witch. And she's plundering. She's plundering our wealth, and she's plundering our blood. She's sucking our blood in the daytime. And in the nighttime, she's sucking our blood. This is a tigress. It's a description of a woman from Srimad Bhagavatam. That's how the Bhagavatam describes a woman, or the wife. Or it describes the son as a plunderer. The son is the plunderer of our wealth, the son and the grandsons. And Puranjana, his sons aren't just like, you know, these Prabhupada's described, Vanasankara. Puranjana's sons are produced, they have very good qualities. It's described that King Puranjana, he followed Vedic culture. And his children were very exalted. They had the same qualities as Puranjana and his wife. But here now in the next couple of purports, Puranjana's grandsons, sons and grandsons, they've become plunderers. Even though they've had nice samskara, and good birth, good upbringing, etc., etc., fully Vedic culture, immersed in Vedic culture, but they're plunderers of the wealth of Puranjana. So you can imagine, after hearing some of these descriptions, we forget about the Vedic culture part of it, we forget about the samskara part of it, we forget about... See, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Devamrita Maharaj, he's fond of saying that the Srimad Bhagavatam, it presupposes the human platform. Bhagavatam is talking to us from the human platform, not from, like, Ugra Kama. Yesterday, we heard from Ananda Tirtha Prabhu, he's talking that this materialists, they're not even on this platform of the Kamakandis. The hardcore materialists, They're performing activities that are meant to destroy mankind. So they don't come to this platform of Karmakanda anyway. But Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting to the human beings who are on this platform of culture, Vedic culture. So where do we stand? We're not even within this culture. We don't even come close to it. Without connection with Krishna consciousness, we don't have a close connection to this Vedic culture. So the Bhagavatam, our understanding can become distorted. That's the point. The first point is that the Bhagavatam is not saying that the children of the Vedic culture, the children of devotees who understand the goal of life, are plunderers of wealth. Or that our wives or our mothers or our daughters and sisters, that they're witches or they're tigresses at night time. The Bhagavatam is describing materialistic culture, materialistic men and women, and devotee men and women. And if we get them confused, we're going to come out with a really bad khichri, with a really bad understanding of the philosophy, with a false conclusion of the reality that's presented to us to enable us, to inspire us to become absorbed in our Krishna consciousness, because it's very difficult to become inspired by a teaching that is saying that we're useless, we're hopeless, we haven't got a chance. We can't get off first base. Right? We're plunderers and we're yavanas and we're hopeless. But Srila Prabhupada presented a completely different vision. Srila Prabhupada, he was capable of fanning the smallest, tiniest spark of bhakti and creating a big inferno of devotion in the hearts of materialistic people, in the hearts of the misguided civilization. Prabhupada was able to see that bhakti, to fan the bhakti, in the mood of Krishna, Bhava Grahi Janadana. Krishna is seeing the bhakti of the devotees. And that's where we want to try to steer this understanding today in this presentation. That we don't want to take away the wrong conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam. We don't want to see our children as a burden. Prabhupada said in the Srimad Bhagavatam purport in the 10th canto that in Vedic civilization, children were never considered to be a burden in the family. Children were considered to be, it was a celebration. This is in relationship to Lord Krishna's Uttana celebration, the festival when Krishna turns on his side. You know, the Trinavata pastime. Lord Krishna turned on his side, and when he turned on his side, this was cause for celebration. We have to have a festival now for Krishna turning on his side. Krishna's been lying flat on his back, now he turned on his side, so we should have a festival. This is the real concept of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the real presentation of the Bhagavatam of Grihastha life, is to celebrate the children, not to see them as a burden. Prabhupada says to see the children as a burden is the materialistic concept of life. Because it means they're interfering with our sense gratification. They're a result of our sense gratification, and they're interfering with our future sense gratification. But if we see the children in the mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the mood of Srila Prabhupada, that they're a connection. Or the other day, the conclusion in the purport, Guru Bhagavan Prabhu was asking the question, what does it mean that the children should be seen as an extension of the consciousness of the parents? Prabhupada said in the purport that they're extension of the consciousness of the parents, that the parents see the children as servants of Krishna. The husband sees a wife as a servant of the Lord. The wife sees a husband as a servant of the Lord. And in this way, the devotees are not in this materialistic category. Prabhupada makes it very clear, in case we didn't understand in this context today, Prabhupada makes it very clear in the purport that we're talking about materialistic. This is a conception of the materialistic concept of life. Prabhupada says, this is the way of materialistic life. In materialistic life, one is encaged within the body and deluded by false egoism. He's thinking that I am an Indian, I am an American, I am Indonesian. I am Australian. He's thinking this. And this is the very root of the Sambandha that Prabhupada's teaching us today. And teaching us from the first day in the Bhagavad Gita, Dehinosmin Yutadehi, from the first lecture in 1966 in New York City, that you're not the body. And in the last lecture in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, we're not the body. And we might be thinking, can't we move on from this philosophy, we're not the body? But the philosophy that we're not the body is very deep and very profound. If we're not the body, then we understand the relationship of other living entities to the Supreme Lord and relationship to other living entities to ourselves. We understand who the family members are. We understand who the wife is. The wife understands who the husband is, who the son is, who the daughter is, because of the connection with Krishna. Nibandha Krishna Sambandhe, Yukta Vaidagya Muchita. This is the essence of our philosophy, that everything has a connection with Krishna, but on the materialistic platform of life, so long as we identify with the body, we can't see everything in connection with Krishna. Because when we identify with the material body, we see everything in connection with the body. We see everything in connection with the mind, with the intelligence. And therefore, this long section of the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni, incarnation of the Lord, he's teaching us that we're not the body, we're a spirit soul. And what are the consequences of identification with the body? You're going to have a hellish materialistic life. That's a consequence. You're going to identification with the body, we're setting ourselves up for suffering in the material world. And this is where we're going into the process. So our sambandha, our understanding is that we're not the body. Our understanding, the sambandha, is that Krishna is the supreme proprietor of everything, and that we have to give back to the Lord as sacrifice to the Lord to become happy in this material world, to see things in proper perspective. Now, it's said that Shiva Vyasadeva, the literary incarnation of the Lord, he saw in his meditation, he saw this material world for what it is. He saw the living entities, he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he saw Krishna. He saw the living entities, he saw the material world, and he saw the suffering of the living entities. And when he saw the suffering of the living entities, he felt great compassion, like the sages in the forest of Naimisharanya. They felt great compassion for the residents of Kali Yuga. What's going to happen to these Kali Yugaites? They haven't got a hope. How can we support them? How can we give them something that will liberate them from the misery that's coming ahead? They could see this as Trikalagya. They can see what's coming ahead. So Shiva Vyasadeva saw all this, and Prabhupada says in the purport, he saw the process to mitigate the misery of the living entities. And what was the process that Shiva Vyasadeva saw? It's in the verse, Anato Pasanam Sakshat Bhakti Yoga Madakshaje. When I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, it was in New Gaudadesh, where Ananda Tirtha Prabhu joined the Hare Krishna movement, I think. Was it? Almost. Anyway, he's eternally been in the Hare Krishna movement. But one of his earliest places of residence, before he came to Mayapur many, many years ago, was New Gaudadesh. It was a very huge farm in Victoria. And there we had an amazing situation with milking lots and lots of cows, and we had surplus supplies of milk and producing all sorts of amazing milk products at New Gaudadesh. But anyway, at New Gaudadesh, I was a young bhakta there and extremely covered over. And I remember seeing where you wash your plate and clean your mouth. There was two shlokas on the place, the sink, where you go to wash your plates. And one of those shlokas was Anato Pasanam Sakshat. I mean, I couldn't read it then. I couldn't even read it. I remember the first shloka I learned was the Panchatattva Mahamantra. It took me weeks and weeks. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya. It took me weeks to learn this mantra, Panchatattva Mahamantra. So I remember this was there though. Anato Pasanam Sakshat, Bhakti Yoga Madoksha Jai. Krishna says that Lokasya Janato Vidvams, Srila Vyasadeva says, Lokasya Janato Vidvams, Chakre Satvata Sanghitam. That the living entities are suffering and they don't have to suffer in the material world. It's superfluous to them. Prabhupada uses very wonderful language here. The miseries that the living entities are experiencing are superfluous to them. Anato pasanam saksha. And they can be mitigated. They can be overcome by the process, the linking process of bhakti yoga madakshaje, by performing bhakti to a dakshaja, to the Supreme Lord who is beyond our approach through material senses, the Lord, to Krishna. And that the mass of people, lokasya, they don't understand this. The mass of people are bewildered, ajanata vidvams. They haven't got a clue about this knowledge of becoming liberated from misery and the suffering of the material world. And so, Srila Vyasadeva, out of his compassion for the living entities, he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada said. He compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam to enable us, to give us a process to become free from that which is superfluous, the misery. We don't have to experience. We choose to experience misery in the material world, but we don't have to. And Bhagavatam gives a process by which we don't have to suffer. And the verse before or after that was also written there, that yasyam vai sruyamananam krishne paramapuruṣe. That this verse, that just simply by giving oral reception to the Srimad Bhagavatam, by hearing the instructions of the Supreme Lord, then automatically from within the heart, bhakti will sprout. Bhakti comes up to destroy illusion, the bodily concept of life, to destroy shoka, our lamentation, illusion and fear and bewilderment in this material world. Shoka moa baya baha. These are destroyed by giving oral reception to Srimad Bhagavatam in this process of hearing and chanting the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the gift that was given to us by Srila Vyasadeva. It's a gift that's given to us by Narada Muni, by Srila Prabhupada, in his transcendental purports. A process by which we become free from misery. A process by which we can enjoy. The process of bhakti is an enjoyable process. Susukam katamavyayam. When we do bhakti, it's happy. We do it joyfully. It doesn't say sudukam katamavyayam. You do bhakti and you just bite the bullet. You just get on with it. Stoically we experience this the misery, but we're doing it for a higher cause. We do bhakti with pleasure. Our devotional service is with pleasure. We see the material world as Krishna's. The Grihastha, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, he sees his home as a temple, sees his wife as a servant of the Lord, sees the children as servants of the Lord, his wonderful devoted children. We had incredible appreciation. Prabhupada said these children are from Vaikuntha. And we say, but Prabhupada said that one time and it was in a letter and it's not very important. Children aren't really from Vaikuntha. We know that these children have got so many mature desires. Look at what they do. Look when they're going to become teenagers. Look when they're young adults. They're crazies. But actually, and if we think like that long enough, they will become like that for sure. That's called a self-fulfilling prophecy in educational psychology. And there's an even more dangerous self-fulfilling prophecy, and that's a synergistic cumulative self-fulfilling prophecy, where a whole community or a whole family or a whole community or a whole nation will start to think of a group of people like this. These Hispanic people or these blacks or these whatever, Balinese or these, they're all like this. And so they become like that in our concept. We develop this concept, a false concept about who they are. We change our behavior around in relationship to them, and they become that. That's what a self-fulfilling prophecy is. So if we see the children as a result of sense gratification, if we see them as a burden, they become a burden. If we see them as devotees of Krishna, if we see them as enlightened souls that have come to teach us Krishna consciousness, we're going to have a completely different outlook on our life. Yesterday I was on the way to the international school from the other side, from the Goshala side, on that back path. And there was a young boy there. He jumped off his bike. He's on his way to school. He's a little bit late, right? He's getting towards 9:30. And he jumped off his bike. And I was walking behind. I was going to say to him, you know, you better keep moving because you're going to be late for the bell. The bell's going to ring and you'll be late for school. So he jumped off his bike and said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm checking out this worm. There was like a worm about this long on the ground. A little worm, a big worm on the ground. And it was doing all sorts of funky worm things, you know, moving around like a worm. But he was observing this worm. And I was thinking, well, you know, it's an amazing consciousness for a kid. He's seeing this worm as a living entity in the holy dharma, as a devotee of the Lord. One time, and I remembered then that I was waiting in Auckland City, I was waiting for the lights to change, and I was looking around at the intersection, and I saw a mother with a child in a pram, in a pusher. And the child was a little child, maybe 2 years old, three at the most. The child jumped out of the pusher, an intersection, it's quite a busy intersection, and ran up the street on the path and started stamping, jumping up and down. And the child was jumping on this, killing an insect, killing a worm on the ground, and then jumped back into the pusher, and the mother patted the child on the head and, you know, well done, you know, you killed this ferocious insect, this, you know, innocent worm on the street. And I immediately thought of that yesterday, the difference between a devotee consciousness and a material kid's consciousness. As a devotee sees everything in connection with Krishna, they're brought up to believe that the living entity is in the soul, the spirit soul is in the heart of all living entities. And that's a profound understanding to be brought up with. But a materialist is brought up with a completely different consciousness. And many things like this we can get a bit of an experience that these children, that we shouldn't see them as plunderers of our wealth. We should see them as giving so much to us. One devotee here in this community recently told me that his daughter was very upset. She was crying, like almost uncontrollably crying, too much. And he said to his daughter, what happened, you know? What happened? What went wrong? Did somebody tease you? Did somebody take your toy? What happened? You didn't get the Mahaprasadam? He was going through like this list. Like when Yudhisthira Maharaj met Arjuna, he said, what happened? Why are you so disturbed? And she said, Daddy, why didn't I take birth when Prabhupada was on the planet? She's so upset like this that she couldn't serve Prabhupada. She's so upset. Because I was saying to him, you know, Prabhu, these kids, I have a 27-year-old son. He's saying, these kids are not normal kids in Krishna consciousness. You see, this little Rajamohan, he's not a normal kid, right? He's Rupa Raghunath Prabhu's kids, they're not normal kids. Children in Krishna consciousness are very extraordinary. And he said to me, yeah, I was thinking it would be hard to convince this Prabhu. He said, yeah, I know, my daughter was crying like anything. He told me this story. I was telling him a story about something that I learned from my son. And he was telling me what he learned from his daughter. And in this way we can see that we need to develop a synergistic, cumulative appreciation of the children and of the devotees in the community. And that will develop a completely different kind of worldview that we're projecting, that we're successful. Krishna consciousness is a very successful organization of level-headed individuals who are intelligent and, you know, peaceful and good-living citizens. And that we can make an impact on society by our Krishna consciousness, by our connection with the Supreme Lord, by our connection with each other. We have something very powerful. And that's transformational. I want to finish with this transformational meditation of the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is designed to help us to mitigate the miseries, to stop the miseries of life, to teach us that we're a spirit soul and that there's processes to engage in activities that will reinforce that message day in and day out, that I'm a servant of Krishna, completely apart from the gross and the subtle body. This is our kind of internal mantra that we recite to ourselves every day, our self-affirmation. I am an eternal servant of Krishna. What am I? I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. That's our brainwashing program. And then we do service to Krishna. We engage in bhakti. And the transformation comes in if you hear long enough. We hear that we're not the spirit soul. We hear about the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Lord. We begin to taste. We begin to relish Krishna's pastimes. Then we have the two extremes, the material consciousness and spiritual consciousness. The kid who jumps out of the pram and squashes the worm on the street, on the sidewalk in Auckland City, and the kid on the way to Gurukul who jumps off his bike and is in complete awe and reverence of this living entity in the holy dharm doing its tricks on the ground. The material and the spiritual consciousness, two ways of seeing things. The proud Vedic Brahmanas in Mathura who are chanting Swaha, who are very elevated by birth, by knowledge, by culture, by austerity, by charity, by everything, completely elevated souls, but unable, haven't made a transformation of heart, still attached to the bodily concept of I still want to go to heaven. They're living between Mathura and Govardhan Hill in Vrindavan Dham, and they want to do a yajna to go to heaven. Because Prabhupada says, because of attachment to the material body, because of false identification that I'm a Brahmana, I'm an exalted Brahmana, and I can increase my capacity for enjoyment by doing these particular activities and go to heaven. And the materialistic consciousness and spiritual consciousness, the wives of the proud Vedic Brahmanas, their capacity for spontaneous reciprocation with Krishna, as soon as they hear that Krishna is in town, Krishna's here, then their spontaneous reaction is to go to Krishna and serve Krishna and to offer Krishna everything. And the result, shamam hidanya paridim vanamalya baha datupar valanata vesha manuvratam se vinyasta hasta itarena nikuptum hasam, that Krishna, the wives of the proud Vedic Brahmanas, they saw Krishna face to face. Mukabja hasam, with a smiling face. Kanat utpalaka, kanat palava, with a lily in his ear and the hair on his cheeks, kapola. And they saw Krishna standing there in his shamasunda form, like a rain cloud. Shamam hiranya padidim vanamalya baha. And his beautiful yellow silk dhoti shining in the groves of Vrindavan. And he's decorated with a peacock feather in his hair. And he has these twigs, sprigs of freshly sprouted flowers in his belt. And he's decorated with beautiful minerals, colorful minerals of the dust of the dham of Vrindavan. And he's holding one hand on the shoulder of his friend. And with the other hand, he's twirling a lotus. And he's looking into the heart, to the eyes of the wives of the proud Vedic Brahmanas. And it said they took Krishna into their eyes, through the aperture of their eyes, and they forced him into their heart, and they held him there, embraced Krishna in their heart. They wouldn't let Krishna go. That's the result, the transformation of hearing about Krishna. They heard about Krishna, and they hadn't seen Krishna. But when they saw Krishna, they knew who he was. By their hearing about Krishna, by their the process of bhakti yoga, by this meditation, they had Krishna. Krishna says the Mayavadis want to become Krishna. They want to become God. We want to become more than God. We want to become greater than God. We want to control God. Like Mother Yashoda is controlling God. She's controlling Krishna. The wives of the proud Vedic Brahmanas, they took Krishna and they captured him. And he couldn't go. Krishna is captured. Bhakti-paritam. Bhakti-prayachati bhakti-paritam. It says that Krishna, if we do our activities in devotional service with devotion, with sincerity, with something to please the Supreme Lord, then Krishna will even eat a flower. Usually we don't eat flour. Pataram pushpam palam toyam. And I used to think maybe that means cauliflower or something like that. But it says that Krishna, if you put love and bhakti on the flower, he'll eat it. He'll eat the flower even, not just the water and the vegetables and the fruit. So this is the goal of our bhakti, is to develop that, to cover our devotional service with affection for the Lord, affection for the Lord's devotees, affection for the process of Krishna consciousness, and not to misinterpret the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam that we should become cold-hearted, that we should become impersonalist, that we should out of fear or frustration or anger, we should become impersonalists. But the Bhagavatam is forcing us to become personalists. The Bhagavatam is forcing us to engage in relationship and process that will purify the heart, free us from our materialistic consciousness of bodily identification, and to come to the platform of a meditation on Shyamasunda, on Krishna, the threefold bending form of the Lord in the heart. Any questions or comments?
You explained at the beginning that Bhagavatam says on one side that wife is like tigresses and children are like foxes and like that, they are sucking on blood. But we should see it other way. I would like to ask a question because like I have few friends which they are already older persons and they are practicing devotees together with their families, and their wives are also devotees, they are chanting 60 rounds, they are following principles, they are coming to the public service. But what I was observing, these devotees, they are above 50, they are 55 or 60, 62 years old, and their wives, they are still trying that they have to earn more money, they have to equip the house, and then provide for the children which are already grown up, and because, what is it called, the son, he just got married, so we have to wait till he will get grandchildren, and we have to still supply him, and like that, I was observing that actually they are sucking blood from him. So if you can maybe explain a little bit this, because even we are devotees, but ideally we should be without these material desires when we advance and when we are older. But we see that it's sometimes not happening. Sometimes we have still so many material desires and we are still trying to get it even if we are old.
Thank you, Prabhu, for clarification on this point. I hope I can clarify further and not confuse more by what I say. My point is that, as you said rightfully, that correctly, that we shouldn't see our children as plunderers and our wife as sucking the blood. But perhaps sometimes in the community we see devotees who have been practicing Krishna consciousness for a long time and still they appear to be, they still appear to require some facility. They still appear to require some security, and they seem to be putting pressure on, even at the old age of 60, 65, 70. So it doesn't stop apparently, because some devotees are still in this headspace. There's a few ways to interpret this. One of them is that it's very difficult to judge other people. It's very difficult to understand their level of advancement and their level of connection with Krishna and what their quota is. You know, in Ishvarupanishad, we talk about a quota. Everybody has a different quota. Sannyas has a quota, the Brahmachari has a quota, the Grihasthas have a quota. Within the categories, there are quotas also. Krishna allocates different quotas. So, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he has, if you saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi, you might think, hey, this guy is a complete debauchee, he's a sense gratifier, he's an enjoyer. How could he possibly chant 16 rounds a day? Who even knows if he's following the four principles, Pundarik Vidyanidhi? He's got too much facility. He's got a nice hammock, big mirror. He must be looking at himself all day in the mirror. He has nice moustache, nice oiled hair. He's combing his hair too much. Why, how could he be advanced devotee? But we know that when he heard Mukunda Datta recite from Srimad Bhagavatam, he experienced love, ecstatic symptoms of love of Godhead. So it's very difficult for us to see that this devotee has been in the movement for so long, they should be much more renounced. They should be like, you know, the six Goswamis in Vrindavan by now. They've been chanting Hare Krishna for 40 years and still they want to get a fridge. What is this? He wants a fridge after 40 years of chanting japa. He still needs to get an air conditioner and a fridge. What is this devotee? So we have to more be concerned with, after chanting 16 rounds and following the four principles, how I'm able to see my wife and my children as a devotee, and my wife as a devotee. And that's a big, I mean, that would be a huge progress, a big achievement, if we can see my wife after chanting 16 rounds a day and following the four principles as a devotee of Krishna, and not as my object of my sense gratification. If we spend too much time looking at everybody else's wives and husbands and how they're interacting, we're going to get ourselves in a big muddle. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he encourages us to look inside first and then stay there also. Not that we become judges for the rest of the community. Now, Krishna has a special way of arranging things for everybody, for their quota, to satisfy everybody. So we should not become self-appointed judges of the community. That, Prabhu, you don't need this. You know, you've been 40 years. You need to show a different example. But I've been a devotee for 5 years. I'm at this level and I'm working on this. Or whatever progress I make. So individually, I don't want to comment on different devotees from different countries on their level of needs in Krishna consciousness. But as Umala Mataji was teaching us previously in her last class, that these things are like band-aids. They help us, or a cast. You have a broken arm, and the cast helps to set the arm, to keep it in one position. And when the bone is fixed and mended, you don't need the cast anymore. You take the cast off, and you can function. So a lot of these externals, according to ashram and according to advancement, they're just props. They're helping us to stay on the path of Krishna consciousness, and eventually we don't need them. Like the scaffold on the TOVP, that's not going to be there in 20 years' time. It's going to be it'll manifest a very beautiful temple with form and shape and color and texture. We won't be looking at the scaffold and the concrete. It has a different form. It will be able to stand on its own without scaffold. It doesn't need the scaffold. So we look at these externals as scaffolding for us, to help, to prop us up, to help us to stick in there on the path of Krishna consciousness and get a taste and increase the taste, gradually increase the taste, until we connect everything with Krishna, all of our senses with Krishna, fully. Like the birds and the bees and the animals in Vrindavan, they're pleasing Krishna by their sound. And the breezes in Vrindavan are pleasing Krishna by carrying the aroma of the 100-petal lotuses. They're bringing them to Krishna's nose. And they're cooling his body. They're touching his body. And the water, the beautiful lakes in the forest of Vrindavan are pleasing Krishna's mind. They appear like the mind, the peaceful mind of the yogis, of the great souls. Mahan Manaha, Prakapata, Sarasvata. In this way, all the residents of Vrindavan are pleasing Krishna's senses. So we're going to come to that platform of pleasing Krishna's senses. Rishikena Rishikesha, Sevanam Bhakti Duchate. And become free, Sarvapadi, of all the illusion of identification with the material body. Inimuktam, Tatparatvenam, with pure senses, will serve Krishna. In ecstasy. Mataji.
About these plunders that is being described here, I thought that I thought about impressions that are still there within the hearts. And
within the heart or the house?
The heart.
The heart.
And are not allowing us to, even while engaging or trying to engage in devotional service, they are not allowing us to behave or exchange relationships with other devotees in the way that would be desirable. I thought that these plunderers of wealth, similar to these impressions that are still affecting one's consciousness while trying to act in Krishna consciousness for the pleasure of the devotees. I don't know if you would say something about it.
I have a similar response to Prabhu, that the plunderers may still be dwelling in the heart, in this metaphor, maybe not the son who's taking the wealth, but the plunderer may still be in the heart. And so it's up to the individual to work, to do the work in the heart, to overcome the plunderers. And the way we do that is by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, when Parikshit Maharaj, he asked, what is the best thing to do in 7 days of death, before death, in 7 days? And there's 5 potent processes of bhakti. To do deity worship, to live in the holy dham, to have the association of the Vaishnavas, to chant the holy name of the Lord, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So he achieved all these processes of bhakti by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days. He didn't go for pilgrimage. I mean, he was in a holy place already, but he didn't go to any other holy place, to Vrindavan or something like that. He didn't get out the deities and do full-on deity worship. He heard Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days and engaged in all the processes of bhakti by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So, individually, I think the plunderers are there, the anattas are there in the heart. And one by one, we're extracting the plunderers from the heart by this process of hearing and chanting. Rupa Bhu. On the bottom.
Versus saying a materialistic man, he's happy when like the legitimate thieves, like his wife and children, are plundering all his money. So as aspiring devotees in the Grihastha Ashram, should we be unhappy that, you know, that all whatever wealth we have has been taken away in the family situation by so many expenditures, sometimes, you know, as an aspiring devotee, we may think, no, let me try and restrict the money that's being spent in the Grihastha Ashram, but it just, sometimes you can't avoid it, it just goes out anyway. Personally, for myself, you know, I see it happening all the time, no money getting spent on so many things, and sometimes you think it's excessive, but I try to think, well, at least I'm doing book distribution by making money by doing book distribution. At least the books went out. If even all the profit from the book distribution got spent on so many things, at least the books still went out. So in that way, I sort of justify, you know, become a little bit pacified. Like just one short story. I was doing book distribution. We were traveling with a wife and children, and we were living, like, staying in sort of cheaper accommodation. But after a few days, my wife, she wanted some more comfortable situation, and so she wanted to get a bit more expensive motel. And the only thing around town was like $150 for a night, and I was thinking this was too much. But I had to satisfy her, that's what she wanted, and I didn't want to disrupt the situation, so even though I was unhappy, I agreed to it. But then I started to meet these people from around the motel. I started to meet these men from New Guinea, and like 3 of them ended up buying like $150 worth of books. So then I became happy. Oh, this is Krishna's arrangement. Even though I had to spend so much money on the motel, it all came back. So I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Thank you, Rupa. Many of you don't know who Rupa Raghunath Prabhu is. He's an amazing devotee from Australian Yatra, as you can hear from his accent. And he's been distributing Prabhupada's books for maybe 30 years or something in Australia, and collecting huge amounts of Lakshmi, distributing and collecting and distributing and collecting. And what he tells us now is that's the fruit of his service to Krishna, that his grihastha ashram is not a materialistic endeavor for him. It might seem materialistic to us. Oh, Rupa's going to stay in the bigger motel, big five-star motel. He's in Maya. Finally, we knew Rupa would crack. He's in Maya. He's going to go and enjoy. There must be a spa there. He's probably going to swim all night and do all this stuff. We're thinking like this, putting him down. But he meets someone who buys Bhagavad Gita from him and pays for the room for the night. And that was the birth of the Krishna book distribution in America. The devotees needed some money to pay for some gas at the station, and they sold a Krishna book. So when we connect everything with Krishna, Krishna makes amazing arrangements for the devotees. And the devotees are here from Bali today, and from maybe Yogyakarta, from Indonesia. Where are you from, Bro? Bali. From Bali, and we had a good opportunity to visit this Indonesia a couple of times and go to the student hostels there. Amazing hostels in the Bahasa, in the Indonesian language. The word for student hostel is ashram. So all the students in Jakarta, in Yogyakarta, they're looking for a hostel, for a student hostel. So they're going to all the ashrams, and they come to the Kunti Prahlad ashram, and they check it out, and it says, you know, you get these meals and you do this, and it's close by the university. So all these young boys and girls join Kunti Prahlad ashram, right? And they think they're going to an ashram. They just think it's a normal hostel. And they have to get into this routine. And they have deities there in this ashram. Oh, that's okay. So they offer their obeisance to the deity. They have to take food at a certain time every day. It's prasadam, offered to the Lord. And then they have to get up at a certain time, and they have to go to this class every day. So they have a whole routine, based like a temple routine. But it's an ashram, and it's clean, and it's really close to the university. So a lot of students come. And they come in at the start of their degree, and they leave the degree as devotees. They come in as complete kamis. They don't know anything about Krishna. They're just staying in an ashram, the Kunti Prahlad ashram. And when they graduate 3 years later, they graduate as a devotee. They're initiated, chant 16 rounds a day. They're doing the maha. They're cooking for the deity. They're doing the deity puja and everything from the ashram, Kunti Prahlad ashram. And they have a program there. It's near the Gita Nagari Baru. It's a self-sufficient community in Lampung, near Lampung. And so the devotees, they graduate from there, and they go to this simple village where the devotees have established a beautiful community with no electricity or anything. Just so much natural opulence, coconuts and bananas and papaya and pineapple and you name it. Whatever you want is there. Grains, everything, except for nice milk. Balinese, the Indonesian cows don't give milk. The farmers didn't even know cows gave milk. The devotees told them that you get milk from a cow. They couldn't believe it, that you get milk from a cow. So anyway, the devotees, they graduate from this university, from Kunti Prahlad ashram, and they go to live in there's a boys Kunti Prahlad, there's boys ashram and a girls ashram. They graduate, they get married to one of the Kunti Prahlad, Kunti ashram marries a Prahlad ashram, and they go and live in Gita Nagari Baru. And they're young students, so they're young 23-year-old kids that could stay in the city and enjoy life, but they go and live in a remote village, in a Hare Krishna community, and they, I was teasing them, saying, you're going to go and live in this village with no electricity. You have to get the water from the well and pick your fruits in the morning. And I was thinking they're going to say, yeah, I know, that's really austere. And they were just saying, like, yeah, you know, bring it on. We can't wait to get there. These young kids, like, fully enthusiastic, because their whole consciousness has changed in 3 years of hearing and chanting and associating with the devotees. Anyway, I was really happy to see these devotees yesterday near the Goshala, and one of them recognized me. And very happy to see you in the Holy Dharma, and we hope you have a wonderful stay here. Prabhu was leading he was playing Radanga in the Kirtan this morning. Balinese are very good musicians. They're very expert devotees. I think they made 1,000 devotees in the last 10 years. It's the biggest expansion of Krishna consciousness maybe in the world, besides, I don't know, Russia and everything. I don't know, but it's huge. It's like an epidemic there. Plague. Krishna consciousness. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki Granthadāja Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki Gaur Pivanam ki.